Hey, everybody, just wanted to give you a quick note before we start the show. During the recording of this episode, you're going to notice there was a slight issue with my side of the audio. Rob, who is our editor extraordinaire, was able to clean things up as best he could. But what you're going to notice, just a little echoey, reverby thing on my voice, kind of funky, kind of weird. But once we get going, it's not so bad. So just bear with it. Please enjoy the episode, and we'll be able to fix everything up by next show. All right. Thanks, everyone.
Okay, so hey, everybody. What Colton's leaving out is that we accidentally recorded the entire conversation onto one audio track, and that Colton really likes to hold his Zoom sessions with his back turned to the camera in an empty parking garage. So when he says editor extraordinaire, like, that's the main thing he's trying to address. So, you know, for your consideration, podcast awards everywhere. Yeah. Enjoy the episode. Colton has no idea that I added this.
Welcome to Know Your Rights, a music podcast from two guys who know just enough about songwriting to start a podcast about.
Follow Rob
and Colton
as each week we dive into a different band or songwriter and discuss what makes them great,
okay, or otherwise.
Music is law,
and we know our rights.
Yeah, both of us have had kind of a day, but we're here.
What a day. And you know, maybe you have too. Maybe you're watching us on your way to work or watching or listening. One of those two. Doesn't matter.
Don't stare at your stereo while you're driving to work.
I'm distracted because there's a cat just licking itself crazily behind Rob, my co-host, and I can't stop looking at it.
Yes, I do own a cat, but I haven't been able to give him much affection yet. Like we said, it's been a day, and we had a strict time that we had to start this at, and naturally, I was right on time.
Well, rock and roll waits for no one, and here we are. So let's go ahead, Rob. Let's get this rolling. I want you to tell me, what have you been listening to recently?
You know, I was going to tell you, equally opposite, really cool hip-hop duo. I think they're from Virginia. I learned of them on Instagram. I don't follow TikTok, but sometimes on Instagram, a TikTok video will kick in. Mm-hmm. And it's just like two dudes sitting in their car, and I think it starts with, Hey, bro.
Yeah. Man, they said they really liked this beat.
Nice.
Yeah. They said that we really snapped on.
But yeah, they start with that, and then all of a sudden they just start, you know, going at it. This killer beat kicks in.
Working on my feelings, spend the winning, how I'm getting, what am I to do next? Shit, I be worried about my business, looking at the analytics, I be worried about checks. Shit, your hello name tank has a face horn, but I can see that ain't you.
I can see that ain't you.
Trying to blow up like a napalm, trying to make a car boom.
Trying to make a car boom.
They sound pretty good. Check out Push or check out Too Many. I haven't listened to all of their stuff, but those two songs are pretty rad. I just said rad. Those two songs are pretty ratitude. Nice little throwback. But last night I listened to Ren. Have you heard of Ren? I don't know if he's new.
All I can think of is it Len? Was that the Steal My Sunshine band?
No, I don't even know if he's, I didn't learn much about him, but last night I couldn't stop playing it. It was called High Ren, and it goes through the inner turmoil of being a human. And that would be the one that I would, no offense to equally opposite. You guys seem fun. You seem like you got good bars. But his was playing a classical guitar and spitting over it.
I'm looking at the YouTube kind of playing the clip over. I'm not listening right now.
Him sitting in the wheelchair.
Yeah, hospital gown playing acoustic. It seems I'm very excited to listen to this.
It's interesting, but it takes a minute. When it first starts,
I had listened to one song by him right before that, and it was cool, but I wasn't blown away. And when that song started, High Ren, all of a sudden, you know, it's a long song. I think it's like 9 minutes. Yeah, but it gets there. It gets to where you're going to be emotionally moved or impacted, I think.
And it's solo acoustic. That's the arrangement.
Yeah. And
I'm asking because I used to be like, when people would play super long acoustic songs, I had like no patience for it. And I was like, move it along.
Yeah.
It can't be. But I'm like way more into that now. If there's a vibe to it, I can take the journey.
It's understandable. It's a song that if you listen to it at home, be patient. It will get you there.
I appreciate that. Okay, Ren. And you know what? Equally opposite too. Listen to those guys.
Yeah, check them out. Give them a shot.
Nice fellows. Check it out, everybody. Well, I'm going to go ahead and say, and I panicked for a second because, to be honest, the person I've been listening to, in addition to the band for this week, has actually listened to Weezer again. And I want to, it's almost like I should make an addendum from last episode because I realized the entire episode went through and I didn't mention one of the other songs from Weezer that I think is so freaking good. And that's The World Has Turned and Left Me Here.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't mention that the whole time. And I was thinking, God, the now I listen to it again. We don't do singing on this podcast, bro.
Oh, man. We got our throwbacks.
Awful. But the other song that I have to tell you guys about, and this is one of those things where I feel very ignorant about really anything else about this artist, other than I just found her on YouTube once. It just popped up. And I listened to it and it struck me immediately. It's one of those songs where lately it hasn't been that way for me. It's like I'll listen to something instrumental and depending on what I'm doing, the vibe will just hit me and it'll go from there. But I don't know. It's just the opening of the track. This is Jasmine. Am I getting this right?
No singing.
I'm not going to sing. I promise.
Yeah. No, even
Jasmine. Jasmine Trails Candles. That's the track.
Okay.
And it is good. I'm going to play just a bit. It's just super slow and sludgy and it's such a mood. And I've been doing other things lately. I've been writing, trying to do other things. And it was one of those songs where immediately it made me want to make something. And that's
the best. Yeah.
Rare, right? Or maybe not anymore. Maybe it's just because I'm...
It's rare now. Yeah, back in our... Back like, what, 40 years ago when we were in our teens?
Yeah, it is. The height of creativity. But it was. It's a cool track. Also, listen to Weezer if you haven't heard of that band. It's great.
Definitely.
But
the Red Album,
slow,
especially.
Oh, my God, please. Give me slow, give me sludge, and give me just heavy reverb on the vocals where I can't even hear you, and I'm in heaven. It's so great.
And that is a good feed into the band that we are covering. I got to say, I had been trying to remember. There was an artist that I wanted to listen to this week. And you'll appreciate this is a throwback for the two of us, but I couldn't remember the name of the guy. You know me with my excellent memory.
Oh, yeah.
I couldn't remember it. But just through trying to look at the Wikipedia for the band that we're covering today,
what?
I finally found it. I don't know. I can't remember. I think it was something where Andy Hull, and it's a little teaser, was mentioning an artist he was listening to, Ben Queller. I listened to Old Hat the other day.
I love Ben Queller.
I see. I love Old Hat. And I especially love that album. What was the name of the album it was off of?
Oh, Lord.
See,
listeners, please help us.
Yeah.
Chasing Horses. Changing Horses.
Yeah. Changing Horses. And I was so excited. And listening to the song, I haven't lost any bit of affection for that song.
That's a, this is maybe a little tease because I really want to talk about Ben Queller. For me, that's a perfect song.
I can see it.
Perfect.
I can see it. That little moment when he says you're pretty head at the end, where he holds that note out, no singing. But
oh, I want to sing it now. Oh, you know, okay. I want to sing it.
But that was something I listened to this last week, and I that's not for the listeners, even though please check out that song. Old Hat is a beautiful song. But that was one I just felt would be a nice little connection for the two of us.
No, it's not. I feel closer to you so far, and yet
I'm remembering our history when I think of that. Yeah,
filled with nostalgia, another time. Yeah. Bits of rage. Got shirts over our faces. So what do we got? We got equally opposite. We got Ren. We got Jasmine Trails and Ben Queller as a bonus.
Hell yeah!
Throw that in. Listen to Ben Queller. Makes you happy, guys. Excellent. Well, we do have our artist for today, and I realize I want to like build things up, and then I realize that they could see on the episode likely who we're talking about, unless they don't read, which is fine too. I'm not going to judge you, listener. But we are talking about Manchester Orchestra.
That's it.
And I feel like the best way to start this, Rob, is for both of us, this, we have a history with this band.
Absolutely. Right? It's nostalgic as fuck.
And that's hard.
Mm-hmm.
And so much of what I came up with our list is me trying to fight through my nostalgia. Like, what is it? Like 18-year-old Colton, 19-year-old Colton, like in his car by himself yelling at the dashboard to shake it out. Like, that is a sweet, sweet memory.
You know what's, you got it wrong, because what year did that album come out in? I think it was 2009.
No.
Check it out. I looked at it earlier. I looked at it earlier, and maybe it was just Spotify was saying 2009.
I don't think so.
That's fair. I get information wrong all the damn time.
Mean Everything to Nothing, 2009. So how old was I, Rob?
Well, I was
21.
Okay. Yeah. But it felt younger, right?
It does. And that's weird.
Yeah. When I think of that, I think I feel like I'm in high school.
It is, and they're not a high school band for either of us.
No, even Like a Virgin Losing a Child,
mm-hmm.
which, by the way, I have to just shift really quick. They are the perfect follow up to Weezer. Just think of how Weezer, for lack of a better term, I mean, they have a point. They have a point behind what Rivers is writing about,
right? You know,
and shitty lyrics.
Yeah.
And Andy Hull, sometimes I don't think there's a point. And the lyrics sound fucking fascinating.
Well, okay. Oh, I'm so excited to talk about this with you. Because I agree and I don't agree with both of those. Can I give you my hot take?
Absolutely. I can
hot one. Oh, and here's the thing is I wanted to preface with our history, because I think for both of us, there's so many good, like, emotions, good memories that come out of listening to Manchester Orchestra, seeing them live. I think I've seen them live at least twice. I was trying to piece this together with you before, Rob.
Yeah.
And it's also been a very complicated history for me, because I have learned so much from Andy Hull specifically in terms of like songwriting, but more so about performing, like the way to be dynamic, right? When you perform, the way to cut out and let the voice carry things. That's Andy Hull. Oh, I got that from it, right? And
the king the king of guitars cutting out and like a little like percussive beat in the background. And then Andy Hull's angelic voice. He's got great voice.
It is so good. And you got to turn from the mic too, like live, right? He'll turn from the mic and just yell out. And that's like, I ripped that from him so many times.
And you did it very well, by the way,
because here's the trick for those of you who are acoustic artists that are playing in different spaces and it's loud because people don't shut up when you're playing. The trick is to step away from the mic and sing. They have to stop talking.
Your technique was step away from the mic and then go around it and stand in front of the mic, which is a good dynamic.
It would either work or I would upset people. I didn't do well with when shows where people were eating while they were listening to me.
I don't think that's a, you're already describing a very poor place to perform live in.
I was never told ahead of time that that kind of show was happening. It was like, oh yeah, we're playing a show somewhere. Mm-hmm. I'd show up and then there'd be like families, like kids eating a dinner, and I'd go, oh, this is going to go poorly because I don't like this.
I would argue that most of your shows, at least for a stint there, were acoustic. And so you played a lot of coffee shops. You played a lot of...
And those are okay. But yeah I agree. Those spaces aren't always most conducive to performing. But I guess what I'm trying to say is what I think made me a good performer, people thought I was, really a part of it was Andy Hall. And so there's a lot of that. Manchester Orchestra is an okay band. They would be a great band if Andy Hall didn't have such a good voice.
Oh, for sure.
Andy Hall's voice is what makes them not as good. Because Andy Hall is lazy at writing lyrics. Sometimes.
I'm glad you put that in there. Because there are times where his lyrics do pop. They even for an album that I think we're going to have a fun time maybe discussing a little bit. But mm-hmm. even the song Cope, I love that last lyric. All right. I'm sorry, Rivers Cuomo. I said you have immemorable lyrics. I meant that I have a shitty memory when it comes to lyrics. But the
end, a little bit of column A, a little bit of column B. Right? What is it? And we won't become a lifeless lope that wanders round in hopes for sorrow.
Yeah, that's not. But no, it's more so that lyric to where I hope I. What is it? If there's anything I hope that I learn, it's a different way to cope. Or something that we learned is a different way to cope. And then it gets big again. I found that to be a moment where that's a good lyric. That's not like figure it out for yourself. That seems more obvious to me. It seems more directional. Most of the time when I listen to Andy Hull, I feel like he just kind of leaves it open. Where, oh, well, it's for you to determine. And that can sometimes seem like a cop out sometimes.
I don't know. See, that's the thing.
Go ahead and challenge me. It's perfectly fine.
Not even that. I'm challenging myself as I challenge you. And I think when I listen to Manchester Orchestra, it reminds me of the idea that when you have a band that means a lot to you, it doesn't always mean that you think that band is good all of the time. Right? Like I see people who are like fans of bands and like diehard fans of bands. I've never been able to identify with that. Like to me, when you're like someone who is enthusiastic about a band, that means I'm engaging with them at a level that I probably wouldn't engage with another songwriter, right? Because I want to know what makes it tick. And usually if I pop open the hood, I don't always find things that I'm like, oh, all of this is fantastic. But then you just learn tons of stuff from what they're doing. And when I listen to Andy Hall lyrically and musically, I mean, they're a good musical band. Their arrangements.
I'm a bigger fan of post Virgin Losing a Child.
They're a fun band to cover because what I think they do well musically, and you can tell me if you agree, Rob, is they have a lot of simple parts. No one is doing anything extraordinary, right? The guitars are never really that crazy. I think over time they've gotten a little over time, more, but
yeah, because once we get into the later stages, I'm gonna give them a bit of love,
and not in a bad way, right? Like I know they're good guitar players, good musicians overall. Well, I said
a bit of love. I'm gonna give them a bit of love.
They're the best of all time.
But I think they are unassuming sometimes when it comes to their instrumentation.
100%, and they know how things fit together. Right, that's the thing. Like I think that. What's the song that you and I covered?
And we did, what is it? Where Have You Been?
Where Have You Been? That's a great example, right? Where nothing is happening on any instrument. That's like, whoa, stop listening. But the way
fuck do you think we covered it?
Yeah, exactly. And that's what I'm saying. They're a fun band to cover because everyone just does some easy thing. But then it's like, oh, look at it. It's a song. It sounds great.
That little like over there.
It's great.
It's simple. but you might, well, I'm not going to say you might be onto something. That song wouldn't matter if Andy Hull didn't have this amazing voice and the ability to kind of avoid writing phenomenal lyrics, but you can say something that sounds interesting.
The voice becomes another instrument, and it's the best instrument of the band. I think the best way I can critique Andy Hull, the best way I can critique Andy Hull's lyric writing is that it's imprecise.
Yeah.
There's a lot of, like, here's a fun drinking game for those of you who want to do a drinking game for Manchester Orchestra.
What is this drinking game?
Every time that Andy Hull lyrically repeats or flips verses around, right?
Man.
Anytime he does that, take a drink and then stop, because you will hurt yourself. There's so much of that. Stop and go and stop and go. And here's what I know is what I know is what I know. How could you do what you did if you tell what you did?
I don't mean what I say, but I say what I mean.
And at some point you realize, and I think we all have it. Every songwriter, right, has a thing they go back to. Mm-hmm. I know exactly what mine is because I had someone point it out to me. Joe from Leftmore. Hello, Joe, if you're listening.
Yeah. And this was add that to the four bands to listen to earlier.
Listen to Leftmore, please.
Listen to Leftmore, absolutely.
Good for you. And this was just a compliment. This wasn't him calling me out. He was complimenting a record I did for 24 hours record writing, write an album challenge. Mm-hmm. And he said, oh, this is classic Colton Saylor. He's taking two different things that feel a little different and puts them as a contrast. You're either this or you're either that. Mm-hmm. And if you listen to any songs of mine, I'm like, oh no. Yeah, I do that all the time. And it was like a...
Well, I mean, eventually I like to believe that, you know, at least Andy Hull and Rivers Cuomo are going to start a podcast where they judge you and I.
Oh, they wouldn't have to. We have this podcast. We'll judge ourselves every day.
Yeah, but they'd help to get us more listeners.
That would be preferable. Yeah. I guess the thing about Andy Hull's lyrics in these last 2 weeks, I've been really thinking about it. And there's some really good ones. I think the moments that always stand out to me are the moments where he allows a bit of clarity. And it's usually a sentence that's just a sentence. So it's like, if you knew I was dying, would it change you? Right. Like in that song, there's a lot of lyrics that if you think of lyrics as paint, right? Okay. To me, his lyrics are gray. They're drab gray. There's none of the words are particularly interesting to me when he's using them. He wastes a lot of syllables.
What is it? Jackson Pollock, where it's just like he kind of just throws the word at the song.
Yeah, and I enjoy abstract songwriting, right? I don't need songwriting to always, like you were saying about him before, it's not necessarily that there's this hyper literal intended meaning.
No,
Rivers, but
well, he's wordplay. You know, and that's something I know that we don't necessarily agree on this particular band, which everybody please just rip Colton a new one for. But the Beatles, you know, John Lennon had a nice stretch there where it was just wordplay. It's nonsensical lyrics, mm-hmm. You know, and Andy Hull, I got to give him a little bit of credit. And hopefully I don't lose a bandmate over this. Which, by the way, I'm in a band called Default American for everybody.
Hey.
I have to drop that in at some point here. And you feel free to check them out. Judge as mercilessly as Colton judges everybody else, apparently.
Very good. Yeah.
But I think he took some John Lennon wordplay to an even more emotional level. Because mm-hmm. It does at least think of the album titles. Okay. And at least the first two. Mm-hmm. I'm like a virgin losing a child. Yeah, I'm trying to gather what the fuck that means, but I don't know what the hell that means. Mean everything to nothing. I can kind of
imagine. You know, both of those album titles, though, they are very Modest Mouse. Yeah. That is classic Isaac Brock, right?
To an extent, because, I mean, we were dead before the ship even sank, which I guess is not classic. It is now, but at the time it wasn't classic Isaac Brock. That I can understand what he's saying. Like, dude, we're on a ship that you're right. Actually, no, you're right. I can't.
I saw you try. I was like, he's going to try. I want to let him do this. And, well, This ramp up, I think, is worth us getting into our categories now. And let's go ahead and do it. We're going to start with best song. And I want to hear yours first, Rob. What is the best song for Manchester Orchestra?
All right. You know the song by Phil Collins? I can't
believe that. This is off to a great start. Go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah. But the song where it has that like do, 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 ka, ka, boom.
Oh, Air of the Night?
In the Air Tonight. So I'm like, my favorite song by them kind of has that moment, because I don't know about you. Whenever that song comes on In the Air Tonight, or I have to keep listening until that drum fill kicks in. My favorite song is Collie Strings. At the end of last year, I have Spotify, my Spotify most played bands. Manchester Orchestra was like fourth. Yeah, I'm bragging. I can afford that $10 a month, everybody. But Manchester Orchestra, I think, was on my most listened to bands because of that song. When I have a big playlist, it's actually Portland by Mothman Avidity. Please judge me for that title, or that name to my profile. It's an old name, but that song, whenever it comes on, it'll come on random, and I have to stick it out for the. I know we said no singing, but yeah, I saw inside a mirror you smoking. When those drums kick in, with how it's just the swirling sounds going through it, and to kind of go back to how Andy Hull writes, there are times that I think he's the only one who knows the fucking story behind this song.
But that song, and most of that record, like the full band songs in particular, in that record. I think lyrically, when I think of like a really lyrically strong Andy Hull Manchester Orchestra song, those are the songs I tend to think about. Because I think Collie String, it's exactly what I was trying to say before, is it's not always necessarily that they need to tell me a story that I can follow, right? I don't need that out of art anyway. But give me things to grab to, right? Or give me, if it's just words that you want to throw, it's like Mars Volta, right?
Yeah. Lyrically, give me some that summons an emotion in me, something to where I'm in.
Yeah, like a mood poem. And I think that's exactly what that song does. It's an amazing song.
Yeah.
Because the images are compelling. They don't need to tell a story, but they need to compel.
Yeah, exactly. And on top of that, because you're going to be more our lyric guy. And we'll both share Sonic and, you know, the actual instrumentation behind it, but just that function. And also I miss that drummer. I still miss that drummer. When it comes to any Manchester Orchestra song, I can't remember his name, but, the way he wrote the drums, for his patience and his understanding of the song just enhanced everything so much, you know? And yeah, just when that moment hits, it's a Lazier in the Air Tonight to me, and it's better. There's some I have to wait for that big hit.
I think that's an exceptional best song. I'm actually jealous of your best song, because I feel like
you're gonna explain your best song better than I can, because
you well I don't necessarily think so, because I know what you mean. It's like, how do you get the vibe of the song to be such that, you know, it's a slower song, right? It's a longer one. How do you get people to stick around? And there's a lot that goes into that, right? Yeah. And those simple arrangements do it.
Yeah. And even while it's simple, it's kind of complex. The swirling, I would imagine the actual recording process for that song is much more complicated than the listener can even understand, typically.
I'm gonna come in here. I believe, I could be very wrong, Manchester Orchestra, deep fans historians, I apologize, mea culpa. Jeremiah Edmond, I think, may have been the drummer on that record.
That sounds right. And I mean, his beat on Wolves at Night. I mean, Wolves at Night throughout, he has so many memorable beats. He has air drums. When I listen to it, you know, I have to kind of just mimic the hits.
Oh, it's good. Well, I think actually my best song, and I got to tell you guys, when I think of Manchester Orchestra, all of these things have to just be through a lens of my favorite. I don't know how else to do it.
That's right.
But I also think it's...
I kind of want to predict. Is the rest of the band on the song?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Shake it out, huh? Oh, my God. You know why, too? Because it just rips.
That's a rocker.
It's so good. And it's the idea of when it came out. Because at that point, Manchester Orchestra was that lighter touch. I mean, they got heavy, right? Wolves at Night. There's definitely stuff there. But Shake It Out.
The second song, the I can't remember the title right now. I don't have a...
Shake It Out was... It was transformative. I don't know how else to put it. It was... Man, everything about it. And that's the thing, is all the lyrical things I was talking about before, it's there, right? It can be hard to follow. It goes out
the window. Just listen to the fucking music, man. There.
And that last bit, right, where it slows down again. And the drums, like you said, the da-da-da-da-da-da. And then it goes to the beat flips, right, each time. When I get a drum beat like that, that is like, I'll just agonize over that and I'm just lost in it. And they can repeat it as many times as they want and I'll just keep doing it.
The cleverness behind that drum beat is incredible. But, you know, even the simplicity behind just the... I don't want to only talk about drums on this. I mean, we're both drummers, but we also both play guitar and everything.
Percussion, all that. We're the only percussion podcast. That's all we really want to talk about. That's
it. But yeah, even just the shaker on it. Because like right at the intro, it's just, it adds this little flair to it. Because the guitar is... With them, we sound very intelligent.
you're like way on fire tonight in terms of just making sounds with your mouth. And I'm just like, go for it, man.
Yeah.
Just ride that pony.
I think I'm going to be close to the actual notes that are being played, at least.
Well, I do have to say, you're talking about, I think, the unsung hero of those early Manchester Orchestra records. That was Chris Freeman, right? Guy on the organs, but also just he was... They used to have like two drum sets on stage. I don't know if they still do that anymore, but he used to get on there. I mean, they're a good live band. And I think that's the reason why Shake It Out is, to me, the best, is because that song live, I don't care how old I'll be when I listen to it, I'm like, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It just gets it.
Well, and just to go with that, when we were talking about listening, how the nostalgia factor, Mean Everything to Nothing, I don't think I'd listened to that, the whole album, for at least 3 years, beginning to end. And man, it brought me back. Everything on that album just kept pulling me. And I'm like, shit, I forgot about Tony the Tiger?
Yeah.
I'd forgotten about these songs. And the energy behind them was fantastic. And I, if I'm not mistaken, that's the first album that Robert McDowell is on.
It is, yeah. And it's funny, I didn't even know that. I figured he was on the first one.
I kind of learned that over the last 2 weeks.
Now it's so that song for me, I gotta say, so great. And I love that our favorite songs are the best songs that we're coming up with are really kind of on opposite ends of the sonic spectrum.
For Andy Hull, especially.
Yeah.
Because you chose some there. Andy Hull is the king of, you know, I don't know what to do here, I'm going to shout.
Oh, and his, I wish he would scream more, because his, when he like Shake It Out at the end.
Yeah.
That's good.
That sounds great. And what's his name? Chris Freeman, you said his name was? He had a hell of a range.
He was great. He does really cool digital art now. If anyone looks it up, I was looking at what he was up to. That's worth checking out.
Yeah, that's some good information to drop, because I didn't really even think about that. Manchester Orchestra has gone through way more members than I originally understood.
Yeah, it definitely has shifted, but I don't know. It's one of those things where I looked it up and I'm just happy he's still making stuff, because I want the guy to keep just making stuff forever.
Well, that's the thing, is Andy Hull already, his initial approach to the band. And yes, you're right. The dude needs to keep being creative, which, I mean, I wasn't suspicious he wasn't creative.
No, I don't.
But no, with Andy Hull, the original intention behind the band was it was just going to be his solo stuff, and he was going to have friends come in. right?
I think so. Yeah, that was where the whole orchestra part came from.
Wikipedia, baby.
Wikipedia is a beautiful thing. I could get that. I tried doing that.
Donate to Wikipedia. And then here's Wikipedia, the problem. Sponsor us.
Here's the problem with that idea that we're like, I'm just be the guy and I'll have people come in. You have to have friends, like a lot of friends. And I realized that's
you
hard.
Have to have musically talented friends. I think that was the issue you really were running into. That's nothing against. That's just me stabbing at myself.
Let's get to the good stuff, Rob. Let's talk about worst song. I'll go for it. I had you go first before. I'm ready for this one.
I wasn't. Go ahead. Lay it on.
Trees.
Trees?
Ugh. Here's the thing. That riff at the beginning of Trees, in my head when I heard it, that was like when some guy shows up at your band practice and you're like, oh, you play guitar? He goes, yeah. And you go, oh, do you write your own riffs? Yeah. That's the riff he plays. That's the riff. And you just go, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's it's right. Not.
Because that's the one that it kind of sounds. It kind of sounds like what is that song that Marilyn Manson did that he covered? Good old memory.
The good news is anything we think goes on too long, we'll just cut. It doesn't matter. Yeah. I'm gonna cue it up real quick for us.
Sounds good. Yeah, so that reminds me, what the fuck is a Marilyn Manson song? Who does he cover? Sweet Dreams Are Made of This. It's got a little bit of that. It's got a little bit of that flavor. I think the song develops better because I can remember listening to that song mm-hmm. and thinking this isn't that great a guitar riff. But how the instrumentation accompanies it as the song progresses, I think turns into when it comes out of the chorus back into that riff, all of a sudden I like the riff.
I think for me, the moments on that record overall, when they do that, and they've done that other time, like every Stone, right? They do something similar mm-hmm. Where they kind of bring the riff back.
I think every Stone is a worse song than the one you just named.
I mean, where to go with that record? I don't know. But Trees, I think Trees for me, it is, I think to say it is the worst song on that record, I don't even know. I can't tell you because I don't necessarily think Cope is like, oh, man. Cope.
No, Cope is very, I think I used this term when we were just having a really vague discussion on it. It starts getting nu metal.
And not in a good way.
And again, Andy Hull's voice disguises it as not nu metal.
Mm-hmm.
The many mask of Andy Hull, you know.
Yeah, it gives it an emotional register that it doesn't always get. And I think the lyrics, again, I gotta say this, they're not good. Like those ones actually I just don't think they're good. It just plays off of really like wordplay, but wordplay that you're kind of, I don't know. The whole thing feels mishmashed. It's mid-range.
It would have been interesting to hear Kevin Devine on that album with him. Because then it'd just be bad books, right?
Basically. So I've said my piece. I feel like I've shared my opinions. What is your worst song, Rob?
This actually was a bit of a struggle for me because I enjoy their musical landscapes quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And it's top notch. The acoustic version or the Hope version. Boring, man. And Andy Hull and the gang, they're usually pretty good at, you know, going quieter, going softer, going more emotional. That song, what's our next category, by the way?
I think we should just get to worst album as we talk about this, because we're there, basically. Yeah, because right?
That song just sets up my whole disposition for the rest of the album. Mm-hmm. The rest of Hope is the worst album to me.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
It's so boring. It's songs that didn't have to be this. I appreciate their ambition, mm-hmm. you know, to try to write, we're going to go heavy and then we're going to turn all these heavy songs into soft songs. That's quite the undertaking. It really wasn't needed.
Kind of philosophically, it's just kind of
doesn't stick with you, right?
Yeah, it doesn't. It's like make your hard record. And like they even said, I remember the quote that Andy Hull said is, we want to make a record that isn't out there right now. I disagree mm-hmm. with his thing there. And I just think on both accounts, whenever bands do that, where they can tie one arm behind their back, and they're like, I just want to run a record that does this. I think that's great, but I don't want to listen to it. Like, it's like anytime a band says, we wanted to make a record, but no guitars. I'm looking at you, Say Anything. Oh my God. It's like, just make a good record. It's hard to make a good record. Yeah. You don't have to hamper yourself to do it.
It's such a bizarre white whale to be going after, because it is one of those, like, Ahab, you're sinking your fans' ship.
I want to do the next record and I sing, but I can only sing words with five letters. That's the next thing I got to do. I agree. I have Cope and Hope as worse, because I see them as two halves of one coin.
I can't put Cope, because I actually do. What's a song on Cope that it's just so close to being a really solid song? Because I mean, honestly, on Cope, I would imagine that they were going for Nirvana. That's I hear Nirvana so much in that album.
Oh, it's everywhere. Yeah.
But like Indentions is a good song to me.
I was gonna say Indentions is the closest I think they get to what I think they're trying to achieve.
Yeah. And yeah, you know,
it's a boring record, man. I don't know.
It is. When it comes to what we've gotten to see from them at this point in time in their career, mm-hmm. it just, you could tell it's, maybe they didn't intend for it to be phoned in or anything, but it just feels that way. And it's really hard to avoid it.
Here's the thing. At the time, I've changed this tune now, but at the time when I heard it, I thought it was bad enough of a record that it made me reevaluate the other records up until that point and not like them as much. That was because it made me realize, I was like, this is their trick, right? Heavy, all mute in the verse. Andy Hull singing about what he's singing about with a beautiful voice, right? Maybe like the best voice in that generation of like alt rock bands. That was it. And when I listened to like Simple Math Mean Everything and Nothing, like songs that really struck a chord with me, mm-hmm. I started to see them as not as special because of that. So I don't know. That's the worst I can say about it.
Yeah. And I thought Simple Math at the time, I thought that was an indicator they were going downhill. Even though now mm-hmm. I kind of take a different note with it. Having listened to it after not listening to it in a while, I have a decent appreciation for it because Cope came out next. You know, and then Hope. It was Cope and then Hope, right?
Yeah.
And that just it really did. I started thinking of them. We've talked about it with a lot of bands that we've always loved. Mm-hmm. It just, there's so many bands that the next record is like, what's happening? Like, was the magic only in the early days?
It's a slow motion car crash. You're like, no.
Yeah.
No.
And we will get into those bands, everybody, that the slow motion car crash. I don't think they pull what Manchester Orchestra pulls to mean, where I think they do kind of dig themselves out of the.
Oh, I think I agree with you on that. Let's get to underrated song.
Underrated song. Oh, man. Let me take a look here, because there are honorable mentions on this one that I'm probably just going to lag on getting to. But the underrated song to me is Pale Black Eye, or I should say underappreciated song.
I was going to say underrated was hard with this band because it's not like there's a ton of like chatter about.
Yeah,
well, not that one.
If I went specifically off of the term underrated, I would go with Bedhead. That's a song where it was a single, and I don't think it gets as much attention for when it was a single.
Yeah,
you know, Tori, cool song. Oh my god, you know, it's fun. It's a cool song, and they were on a new like soundscape at that point in time.
100%.
Yeah. I think Pale Black Eye, man, the vibe of that song and how it moves. I love how it starts off, the textures behind it, and then the advance, because it starts where it sounds a little more major scale. Mm-hmm. And then it transitions into this kind of eerie minor sound.
There's some good guitar work on that song. Yeah. Too.
Yeah, and I mean, the lyrics, again, don't know. I don't know what the Pale Black Eye reference even is.
There is a lyric on there, and like what I was saying before is when Annual wants to like reach back and get something, mm-hmm. he'll say something and you'll stop, right? Whereas mm-hmm. it's like, God damn, I'm tired of lying. I wish I loved you like I used to.
It's deep. You know who Amy
that's
is.
That's a line.
When he says, what is it, like Amy... Amy's his wife.
Yeah.
Oh, like, dude, Andy, you're being real brave here, man. You are being real brave. But I don't know what you're talking about, but I'm sure as hell that she does. You know?
Does she listen to that record? I don't think she. I wouldn't. I would get far away from
maybe.
That record.
Maybe she is always telling him when he gets home and he plays the new album for her. She's like, "What are you talking about?"
More metaphors, no more metaphors. Yes. Yeah. I could see it. I think that song to me, it starts out, and I remember my first time I heard it, I was like, yeah, this is great. Like they're already kind of playing with being like a Southern rock band. Mm-hmm. And that was like their Kings of Leon moment. I was like, okay, yeah, I'm into it. I think my problem with Simple Math as a record is exactly, I think Pale Black Eye is the perfect example. Why'd they get an orchestra? Don't get an orchestra. They couldn't handle it.
The thing is I think at this point in time, it's a shame. My memory is so poor that Chris Freeman's out of the band at this point in time, right?
Oh, I think he's in. Okay. He's still in.
But they strike me as they discovered MIDI keyboards at this point in time and just went like, because you know how MIDI work. Or for those at home who don't know, like a MIDI keyboard, you can go through all these different, each key will have this big orchestral sound. Yeah. And I think they just got a little carried away on that album to where they just had a really good time with MIDI keyboards.
I also think it's the fact that it's what probably their biggest record in terms of budget. And it's and I say all this because I know if ever we had that opportunity, right, where hey, you get an orchestra, hey, here's a whole children's choir. Oh, yeah, I'd go for it.
Oh, man, Virgin.
Oh, but that's the thing is I think so much of that record, when the orchestra starts to play and overplays every song, I'm like, they didn't need it. And Virgin was my honorable mention, by the way, for worst song.
And you know what? That's a tough one for me because I like the song and I chastise myself. Like, I'm whipping my back when I'm listening.
Atonement.
I'm like, don't listen to this. Like, I'm so sorry, Lord, that I like this.
He's mimicking song. Whipping himself in the back if you guys are not getting the lovely view I'm getting.
Thank you, man. I'm bad at not
I'm painting a picture.
Yeah.
I have a problem with children singing also. That's like a personal thing. It bothers me. I don't want it ever. So yeah. I don't know. My underrated song, and again, for like you, I just think maybe it's underappreciated. I don't even know how to classify it. I just wanted to talk about Pride. Pride is a badass song.
Yes, it is.
That and that riff, the drums again, the restraint on that song and the drums is so perfect. And that's like a driving outside and that comes on and it's just kind of, oh, it takes you over.
And within the album, when that pops in, it's so subtle. It takes a minute to work itself up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's right after Shake It Up, right?
He's talking about.
But that last part, what a dead. Like, and like when I was saying, give me words that are compelling. I don't need an image. That's what I'm talking about. What a dead neck, dead head, right? Just the sounds of those words together are all he needs, right? With that kind of a voice. Oh, that song rips. I don't even have anything else smart to say about it.
And then all of a sudden it kicks in, because the whole song, it's so subdued. And then it is kind of nice when the drums kick in again, or when they really pick on the like, sound, what a dude.
Oh my God, yeah.
And to me, that's always been kind of a really cheap approach to me when it comes to songwriting. Like, now speed up the drum beat. But for that song, the way that they orchestrate it, Manchester orchestrate it, it functions very well. You know, they're pretty damn good composers, I feel.
They know how to set up an arrangement. I 100% agree. And, well, now I'm going to dive into friends of theirs. I think we've had discussions about Kevin Devine, where I think we both said if he would write more with them, man, what a band.
Lyrics would definitely make sense.
let's go into overrated song. And I'm gonna step up here. Mine is a little bit of a cheat, but I feel in my bones this is real. I'm speaking my truth. Every Andy Hole acoustic song is overrated. And I'm going to have
I can see mentions. Don't Let Me See You Cry, or Don't Let Them See You Cry. I can see
a lot of those phony acoustic songs on
that. Not phony, Andy. Don't get mad at me. Not phony. Not necessarily as great as everybody.
It's the thing where I think, again, it's the voice, it's the vibe of him playing by himself, right? Mm-hmm. Where that in and of itself is just emotional. But I don't think any of those songs are strong enough to work on their own necessarily. And I think over time he played with it more, add more textures, right, to his acoustic songs. I think the parts, right, on Black Mile to the Surface. That song is not my favorite on that record by far, but it's an improvement. And I know just from even hearing about it from the first record, he just had those songs and threw them in. The only songs that were on that first record. But I don't know. I love this band, and I do really appreciate and like Andy Hole as a songwriter. I think when you're an acoustic act, like when you're just playing by yourself, you have to, there's stuff you have to come that comes with that, right? Yeah. And just the fact that you got a nice voice, it's just not enough. And a lot of those songs are just kind of empty to me. There you go. My hot take. I'm sorry, everybody.
It's difficult when it does come down to being an acoustic song. I need there to be a little more weight to the lyrics.
Well, I Can Feel a Hot One. It's a great example. I wouldn't classify that as straight up acoustic. Mm. But that arrangement is great. I love it. I do love the lyrics. $100 is not great.
You asshole.
I don't like that. I don't like that song.
You asshole. I don't think no, you don't understand. We're on overrated songs, right?
Yeah.
Try and guess what my choice was.
Talk about it. I'm not going to talk about it.
$100. The sonic level of the beginning, that song seems like it's about to really take off. the easing into it, I feel like the lyrics they paint a picture, you know, of him like trying to talk to his desired one or his loved one, you know, and saying, I will be there for you and all this. And while it is fun to me, that's why I am fine. It's pretty fucking corny. Yeah, it's another one of those Andy Hull, like, what should I do? Scream, shout, let's go.
Just go for it. I don't want to. I think this is correct, right? And this wasn't research I did recently. It was from a while ago because I wanted to see what was the $100. I believe that song is like his parents loaned him and his wife $100 for something, and then they lost it and got in a fight about it. And I imagine he ran to his room and said, I'm going to create magic with this.
Yeah. That makes me appreciate the song more. Not that I dislike the song. This is a throwback to our last episode. Overrated does not mean I dislike the fucking song.
I think it's the worst song on that record. I wish it wasn't on it. It doesn't need it, because I Can Feel a Hot One is right after.
Mm-hmm.
They don't need it. I don't know where that came from. I think along with you, it's not like it's awful, but it's one of those, if you know the story, it's like, oh, it makes sense. But you kind of need to to hit with anything.
Yeah. And I think you got it right, Tori. I think he had that song and just, let's throw it in there. Let's find a spot within the track listing where we can throw this in. It'll switch it up a little bit, whatever. But you're right.
Take it out.
It was already, it was going to be handled.
Yeah. I Can Feel a Hot One had it.
Yeah.
All right. I think we are at best album. We're best album? We're best album. I'd like to end on a positive note. Guys, I'm the host, master of ceremonies, and I'm doing the best I can.
The host with the least.
Oh, it's with the lead. Do you want to start your best album?
Best album? Yeah. Black Mile to the Surface.
Guys, it is a Black Mile to the Surface. I'm so happy we have the same album.
Really?
We have the same one.
I did not think you were going to choose. That album is...
It's a good album.
It's a great album to me. The medley section, the way it opens up, even this is one of those moments where I think when we were talking about like overproduction, the opening of it, I love the fact that it's like at a church choir-y vibe behind it.
Yeah.
It comes out of the gates fucking great. And the instrumentation throughout the whole album, I think they were in their element.
It's what I was saying before about Cope, where it made me reevaluate if I even liked this band. Mm-hmm. I was like, I don't think Simple Math was good anymore. And I even Mean Everything to Nothing. And that was originally going to be when we said Manchester Orchestra. I was like, oh, that's the record. That's the best record. And then I went back to a Black Mile to the Surface, because when I heard, I can't even remember the first song I heard. I think it was The Gold. Mm-hmm. And I went, oh, this is perfect, right? It is. If Hope was to me like a natural evolution from Mean Everything to Nothing, that like kind of raw raggedness they went for.
Mm-hmm.
I think Black Mile to the Surface is like the record they should have come up with in a lot of ways after I'm Like a Virgin Losing a Child.
Yeah.
It's kind of like that perfect sister, right, to that record.
Yeah, I can say, well, and it's just the instrumentation. What by this I don't mean like how the instruments work. What they're using instrumentally within it would have been interesting. I mean, it probably was for the better that Chris Freeman wasn't on it, but it just seems like he would have had a good time like getting to be in there, because there is a little bit more dominance to
the soundscapes, the keys, and that.
Yeah,
I agree with you. Yeah, and I wonder how much of it is just learning from that, right?
Because I mean, listening to again, I go back to that medley. Mm-hmm. You know, what is it, the Alien, the Grocery,
Alien, right? Sunshine and Grocery.
Yeah Cryptic. The flow of that, I don't know what the story is on that, but at that point I don't feel like it's nonsensical lyrics throughout that album. Actually, it doesn't feel as nonsensical phoned in lyrics to me.
There are a few things here or there, I'm sure, but I agree with you where it is. I mean, that's the reason why it's my favorite, is like the gold is.
Yeah.
Oh,
and they do actually, because on The Gold, if I'm not mistaken, that's the one where the first chorus, the band cuts out and it's just vocals. Mm-hmm. And the second chorus, the band cuts out for a second for the vocals and then comes in. And then the third time around, they're all doing it. So I'm like, yeah, you're using Manchester Orchestra tropes, but it's like you give a shit again.
Exactly.
Like, you're back.
And how often does that happen? How often does it feel like a band's best record is one that wasn't their first or their second?
Well, and honestly, it's fucking incredibly rare. I think that plays a role into what you were saying in the last podcast. Mm-hmm. It's just like you just become a fan of records because you get let down so many times. And the fact that they bounced back was really, it was charming. It's like, I knew I loved you guys.
Yeah. You did it.
And go ahead. Sorry.
Well, I was just going to say, I know we want this to turn negative, but Million Masks of God, I don't know.
Man, fuck you. I like that album.
It's not a bad album.
I think that's my second favorite album.
Black Mile on the Surface is so much more dynamic.
That's on its own. But the only issue, I think the reason the Million Mask of God takes a step down is it's very electronic. That's very MIDI keyboard. You know, it, but the soundscapes are still pretty fabulous. Fabulous.
I know exactly what you're talking about. I think Black Mile on the Surface is like as a record, right? And like, I don't know if every single song I'm like, is my one of my favorite, like top five Manchester Orchestra songs. I think, funny enough, Mean Everything to Nothing is always going to have those for me. And I'll never be able to parse out half bunch of that. It's just the lovely memories I have of loving that band when I was younger. But as a record that works cohesively together, where they're not putting in those songs where I just wish they weren't there.
Yeah.
It's definitely Black Mile on the Surface.
And on top of that, they've always, I don't think they have a record that doesn't have a concept or a theme behind it, which is something I do admire behind them. But I think 100%. That's when they nailed the theme, the concept.
Yeah.
You know, that's where it's just, okay. And I mean, he's always talked about existential dilemmas. That's always a vibe I've gotten from his lyrical approach. It seems like it's very existential. And that one, it felt, again, just more focused, more on the nose, not on the nose. That sounds wrong.
It's the best kind of art, right? It's the one where you can feel the intent, but you also grow with it on your own. And it allows itself to present different things.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also this, you feel like you're in good hands. And that's all I want. I want to feel like the person who's creating it knows where they want to go. I can go with them. I can go somewhere else if I want, but I feel assured. And I do on that record.
Yeah.
All right. Give me a 1 out of 10. Mm-hmm. Rating for the Manchester Orchestra
discography. Overall body of work. So let's see. Let me just to kind of give everybody an idea. Weezer, in case you didn't listen to the Weezer one, you said Weezer was a 5 out of 10.
Mm-hmm.
I gave him a 6 out of 10 because I have a heart.
That's fine. That's fair.
I am going to give Manchester Orchestra, I think this is the first time we're going to have a decimal in there. Because we just have so many bands to cover. I want to give them actually a higher rating than I'm giving them. I'm going to give them a 7.5.
Whoa, 7.5.
Yeah.
I can dig that.
I really appreciate the band's work. Andy Hull has a great voice, and his lyrics can be captivating.
I can see it. I take it as a law of averages. Because there are records in there that are definitely in the upper tier for me, and the work is in the upper tier. But I also, like, there are records of theirs, like you said, with Cope and Hope, and lots of Simple Math that just drag me down.
I don't hate those albums as much as you.
It's a 6 out of 10.
I love 6 out of 10. Hey.
It's a 6 out of 10. I'm growing.
You're growing. You're getting better. And you know what? You're probably allowing for the growth of this podcast. Because who knows, there might be bands that come in or I'm like, okay, maybe Manchester Orchestra is a 7 or maybe they're a 6.5.
You know? Can I tell you that when I was preparing for this record, I turned to my wife and I said, am I a grouch? Am I grouchy?
You're a curmudgeon.
She's like, we listened to this record and she said, no, you're a bit of a snob. And I went, yeah.
Well, that's a dangerous thing, man. we're in a weird place for two songwriters, because typically we're not critics, but this podcast we're kind of critiquing artists that we have admired for a long time.
That's always beneath it.
Yeah,
right.
If we were on tour, if we played a show with these, well, you know, if we went on a tour with these guys, nothing but compliments.
No. But behind the back, I'd be like, hey, you know Andy Hull.
Yeah,
we're got to stop with those acoustic songs, man.
Yeah, we're letting out stuff that, you know, just apparently was boiling up.
It's all good. It's all love. We love you, listener. We love you. We want to thank Manchester Orchestra, Andy Hull, everyone, Chris Freeman. Stand-up guys. Thank you for being you. Please continue to do things. And we should tell you again, if you have any comments, if you want to tell us that we're totally wrong, that I'm heartless. Right? What's wrong with you, Colton? Black Miles, or who knows what you want to tell me? Write us at what, Rob? What is our email?
That's right. It is no.your.rights.podcast.
gmail.com.
At gmail.com. And we also do have, we also have an Instagram.
We have an Instagram?
We do have an Instagram.
We have an Instagram. Go to the Instagram. Do whatever happens on Instagram.
If you follow us on Instagram, I promise we'll try to run it. Until then.
And if you're curious, listen to some records before our next episode. Want to be in the know? We're going to be talking about Vampire Weekend, everybody. There, so enjoy those lovely records. Going to be a lot of fun. Rob, I have a great rest of your night. Great, yeah. However long until I talk to you again.
Yeah, man. I appreciate you, dude. It sounds like you know your rights.
And that's that? That's good. That should be the end.
Was that okay?
I don't think that's the thing. I don't think we found it yet.
We're going to figure it out, everybody. We're going to figure it out. Until next time, this is Rob.
This is Colton. And when you know your rights, you know what you know. Right on. That's what you know.
Not bad. Not bad. That's an okay ender.